Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
So, welcome to another Feisty Pod episode. I'm Michael W. Dean.
I'm Nima Vedati. What's up?
Yeah, we're going to talk about hip-hop today. Hip-hop.
Is that what we're talking about?
So, what's the difference between hip-hop and rap? I know, but you tell.
Hip-hop and rap. Well, rap describes the vocal style. Rap is, you know, what you're doing when you're rapping in a rap song. Hip-hop is, I guess, more referring to the music. Hip-hop is the beat, you know, the kick drums and the snares and the hippity-hop, as Bill Cosby would say. So hip-hop is the music, rap is the lyrics.
Really? I took it as rap is the music, hip-hop is the music and the lifestyle.
I guess I've never really thought of it that way. To me, rap is about spitting. You know, it's about the lyrics. That's what rap is. And music, where that's the emphasis, I think, you know, you'd call that rap. Where music, where it's more of, you know, it's the idea of dancing and anybody can enjoy it. It's not really the fact that you're sitting there trying to listen to what the MC's trying to say. That's what I consider hip-hop, you know, like club music, stuff like that. To me, it's almost all sort of the same thing, but that's how I differentiate it. Rap is more about the lyrics and the storytelling, and hip-hop is more about the feel and the beat and the music and the that kind of stuff.
Do you know rapper Wiz Khalifa?
Yeah, he's the black and yellow guy, right?
Yeah.
Black and yellow, I know Wiz Khalifa.
He was arrested, here, let me read this little thing. He was arrested on drug charges after a concert in Greenville, North Carolina this week. After police searched his bus and charged him with felony counts of trafficking marijuana, maintaining a dwelling vehicle place for sale or storage of marijuana, and a misdemeanor charge of possession of drug paraphernalia. He'd been performing at East Carolina University. He was released on $300,000 bail.
$300,000 bail. That's an insane amount.
Yep. And it's interesting. They charge him with dealing. He had 2 ounces on his bus. You know how long 2 ounces of weed lasts a hip-hop crew?
A concert?
Yeah, a concert.
Show, one show? Couple
That's
shows?
Not dealing. Yeah.
And now, the Nima News with Nima Vedati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today. Tyranny Today.
You know, an interesting thing I found out recently was that federally, almost all the time, dealing is charged as a violent offense.
Really?
Tell me what's wrong with that.
That dealing is charged as a violent offense, it's completely insane. It's the opposite of violence. If you're dealing, that means you're selling something. You know, somebody wants to buy it. If I want to buy pot and you want to sell pot and you sell me some pot, where's the violence there, Michael?
The violence is in the police pointing guns at your head and arresting you.
Exactly. That's where the violence is. The violence is the law. The violence is what the police are doing, what the government's doing, especially if they're going to take your money. Come onto your bus with guns. I don't know what the raid looked like. I mean, did they raid him? Was this like SWAT tactics or how did this happen? That's what I always want to know. Because I imagine if I ever got to be a big famous rapper, cops aren't getting on my bus.
I know.
There's no way.
Well, I wasn't there. I was supposed to be there because I am his main cut creator. That's a lie. And you know I'm old because I said cut creator. What do you call that now? Producer?
Yeah, you'd be his producer.
Yeah, I'm not.
His beat maker, or one of them.
I really like his music. I checked it out. I kind of don't like the ethic of it. It's all like, I'm going to kill you, mofo, or some of the stuff I saw. It's him and his posse pointing guns at the camera and menacing.
Okay, but okay.
Tupac, yeah, I love Tupac. I watched one of those many documentaries about the real truth of his demise recently. The really horrible one. His music is amazing, but I don't like that a lot of it, or a recurring theme, seems to be everyone should be on welfare.
Yeah, I seem to remember a Tupac song where he was sort of like talking to Bill Clinton. He was like, you know, what's up with this? How come you're not helping us, kind of thing? And I guess that was kind of political at the time. But to us, you know, as anarchists or libertarians, you're not going to want to ask the president for help, just like you're not going to want to call the cops, which is one area where hip hop actually does seem to get it right most of the time, is don't talk to police.
Never talk to police, but have a song that's an open letter to the president. What's the problem with that?
Well, that's the problem with that. But I think a lot of other people get it right in hip hop that you shouldn't talk to the cops. I mean, there's the stop snitching in the Boondocks, you know, and the T-shirts in general. And that's a recurring theme I've heard in a lot of hip hop. And distrust in the justice system in general, which is so obvious anytime, because a lot of rap is, you know, it's storytelling about the drug war. And it's so obvious to, you know, even people who listen to rap or people who are rapping it or people in the community or the people who the stories are about, it's so obvious who the good guys are, or not necessarily who the good guys are, but who the bad guys really are in the drug war.
Well, I think there's a lot of major problems with the justice system. And one is that thing of, like, first of all, that drugs are illegal, but second of all, that dealing is considered a violent offense. And thirdly, three strikes laws. I wanted to talk about the unintended consequence of three strikes laws. Eric Holder was saying he's concerned about the increase in cops being shot. I think cops are being shot more because of three strikes laws. Basically, three strikes law is if you get three violent felony offenses, the third time you just go to jail for life. And I think a lot of people, when faced with that, they're just going to shoot it out. You know, they're like, I'm not going back there. It wasn't fun.
Exactly. And I mean, if you think about it, there almost is... So, I mean, not obviously shooting a random cop. I mean, that's like killing civilians in a war. But I could see an instance where this is your third strike, right? And the cops are coming after you, and they're going to try to throw you in a cage and ruin your life forever.
Yeah.
Then what? I mean, you're going to act like that's a self-defense situation. It's either you're going to be in federal prison for the rest of your life, or you're going to try to get away. And
let's pretend to be minarchist for a minute. Let's put on the minarchist hat. You know, small government is best, but government is good. That kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Even if you believe in government, three strikes laws get cops killed. I'm not saying it's a good thing, but if I were a cop, I'd be against three strikes laws. It's something some politician bureaucrat made up, and then the guys out on the street are getting killed over it.
Same with the drug war. You were saying this in another episode. Cops should be against putting their lives on the line for something like that, don't you think?
It completely undermines the legitimacy of good cop work, of, you know, catching murderers and rapists and thieves and putting them in a cage, if you think that's good, or punishing them in some way. You know, in a libertarian paradise, there'd be some of that. It'd be privatized. But I don't think the idea of cops are bad. I think the idea of cops with unlimited power and government backing and do whatever the bureaucrats say is bad.
Right. Right. Basically, personal attack dogs for politicians is not what we want cops being.
Yeah, I want cops to protect me from someone beating my head with a baseball bat or burning down my house. And I could see three strikes laws if the three violent felonies are, you know, beating someone with a baseball bat, putting them in a coma, and then burning down a house full of kids, and then shooting somebody for the hell of it. Those are three felonies that I could see adding up to life in prison. But if any one of those is dealing drugs and that's considered violent, it's a violation of the Eighth Amendment. It's cruel and unusual punishment. And it's been challenged on that and lost.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Cases where it was drugs.
Yeah. And they're state laws. They're not federal laws.
Right.
And not all states have them. California has them.
Right. So in California, does at least one of them have to be a real violent offense? Or because drugs are considered a violent offense, if I get caught selling crack three times, I don't know exactly
how the baseball stats of it work, but I do know that I knew a guy who had two strikes. He was in AA. He was sentenced to AA by a judge as part of his parole. And to his credit, he was like the best little AA soldier I'd ever seen. I mean, he got there early and set up the chairs, and he stayed late and emptied the ashtrays, and he made the coffee and brought the cookies. But he'd had two strikes in his neck. I mean, he was a big, tough dude. And one time I saw this guy like get into it with him and just, you know, harass him for no reason. And it's something that like a lot of people would have punched somebody for. And this guy just like bit his lip and like let the guy yell at him. Cause in, I mean, he told me, the guy told me, you know, I can't even spit on the sidewalk. I can't even litter.
Huh. Well, I guess again, the instance here is it's also just so arbitrary. I mean, if I murder a whole village worth of people, shouldn't I only get the one strike then?
No, they charge you for each one, and they probably should. You know, murder is inexcusable. Murder is inexcusable, and something drastic should be done to people who murder. Either they should be killed on the spot by the survivors to keep from getting killed, or they should be punished for the rest of their life. But
right. I guess my beef then is boiling things down to, yeah, a numbers game or a system of edict instead of, I mean, taking things on a case-by-case basis. I mean, I think
every time you break an unjust law, an angel gets her wings.
If you have a real honest justice system, then you don't throw people in prison because law A, B, and C combined in this way, as explained by the lawyer, equal up to said number of years. Or however they would do it, it seems like everything should be done with regard to that specific case, and it shouldn't be about stats or padding them or the way they calculate how good they're doing at keeping society safe.
Yeah. Well, but funding and continuation of that system comes from spreadsheets, not from actual results.
Right, exactly. Because then how do you quantify results? I mean, that's the way a lot of government agencies count results is just, yeah, stats from numbers that might not mean you're actually making an impact. It just means, you know, so many people are in prison or so many people have been arrested because of this or taken off the streets, I guess, is the vernacular they would use.
I have a friend who's a government economist, and there will always be work for economists in all forms of government, you know, of that kind of economist, the kind that we don't like.
Keynesian economists, yeah.
Keynesian economists, yeah.
I guess you could even just call them mainstream economists, or court economists is probably the one I would,
court economists. I would go with. The king's economy, the king's bean counters.
Yeah, exactly.
But this guy's dad was a judge in Washington, D.C. He's passed away now, but my friend used to joke with me about the fact that his dad would sentence people more severely if he was having a bad morning.
That's horrible, but for some reason it doesn't surprise me in the least. That's another thing people need to remember is because you put on a uniform, you don't become a superhero.
Yeah.
You don't become non-human or all of a sudden amazingly impartial or anything like that just because you happen to put on a judge's robe. In the end, you're still just a human being. And sometimes is it fair for one human being to ruin another human being's life just because some words on a piece of paper say,
because his wife didn't put out the night before.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I think the system we have now, it's untenable. It's unsustainable, and it seems like it's unfixable by small reforms. It's the system itself that's the problem.
So there was another rap artist arrest recently, an amateur crew with a YouTube video where they were standing around in a park menacing the camera with all their guns, with their fingers on the trigger. First of all, do people ever get shot doing that? I mean, they must. You know, it's like it's a bunch of people that have no gun safety training. But anyways, these guys, some of them got arrested recently because cops saw it on YouTube and arrested them for public endangerment for waving guns around in a public park.
The sad part is that they're going to get away with it, even though the burden of proof should be on the state. And I don't know how you would prove from a simple YouTube video that those guns were loaded. I mean,
yeah.
Would it be complete? It seems like it would be completely legal or should be completely legal to wave around an empty piece of metal in a park where nobody's saying anything about it, right? It's public property.
At a camera. I mean, I would never even wave a gun at a camera in a video. Like in our rap videos, we don't.
Yeah, we try to avoid that. Never point the barrel at something you don't want to destroy. I mean, that's one of the rules, right? Don't ever point the gun at something you don't want to destroy.
I don't want to destroy our camera, but I also don't want to imply that we're destroying the viewer. And because, yep. You know, if either of us ever do anything or are arrested wrongfully even for anything crazy, you know those videos are going to end up on CNN.
Oh, yeah. They'll be playing it on a loop, especially because they'll only be able to like find one really bad one, and it'll just run on a loop.
They'll just play the line where you go,
Nima V, Michael Dean, we ain't got no gang, we ain't got no crew, we ain't got no posse, we got a militia.
Yeah.
Which, you know, we don't got a militia.
And then they'll say, self-proclaimed militia members.
Yeah, we do not have a militia. Anybody who takes that as fact.
Well, like you were saying, according to the Wyoming Constitution, you're already in the Wyoming militia.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll read that too. But it's like, if you take all hip hop at face value, you should arrest Eminem for killing his mother.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, would this lead to that now that they set the precedent of arresting somebody for a YouTube video?
What the man doesn't realize about our music, brother.
I couldn't tell if you were a biker there or not.
Biker? I was going for young black man, but I guess I just come out sounding like biker. But, you know, what the man doesn't understand about rap is that it has a long tradition of boasting and exaggerating. And it's basically even based on something that predates rap music of just guys standing on the corner shooting the shit.
There's a lot of braggadocio. There's a lot of hyperbole. Word. I mean, that's what it is, a lot of it. I mean, not all of it, but that's a big part of hip-hop is... And that's sometimes that's how you're judged on, is how good you are at making yourself sound like you're the best at everything in the whole world. And doing it in a clever way. I mean, there's a lot of fiction in hip-hop, but that's not a bad thing. The fiction has a place.
I used to date this Korean-American gal in... Detroit. I don't even know why I mentioned that she's Korean American. Just I guess that it's intriguing that she was working for the black hip hop community there. And she and this guy had this service of making hip hop videos where for $2,000 they'd show up at your location with three chicks dressed scantily, a camera, and a really nice car, and some money for you to hold.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm not kidding. And they made a lot of them. They'd show up with all this bling and hoochies and Skrilla and let you pretend it's yours for 30 minutes. And they'd shoot two or three takes of the video. They'd go home, they'd edit it, and they'd make $2,000 for like 6 hours work between them.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like a good gig. Maybe we should.
And they were booked in advance. So Wyoming State Constitution article XVII section 1 says, of whom militia constituted. The militia of the state shall consist of all able-bodied qualified residents of the state and those non-residents who are accepted into service between the ages of 17 and 70 years, except those exempted by law of the United States or of the state, but all residents having scruples of conscience adverse to bearing arms shall be excused therefrom upon the conditions as shall be prescribed by law. So basically, if you're between 17 and 70 and you're not a felon and you're not a conscientious objector about holding guns on religious grounds, you are part of the militia. So I guess I am in a militia.
Right.
You're not, because I don't know if Washington State has that.
I don't know. I should look that up. I doubt it, but it's possible.
So I said I'm not in a militia, but I guess by moving here and owning guns, I joined one.
Yeah.
By order of the state.
So I guess, yeah, that makes just about everybody in Wyoming a militia member.
So if we ever get attacked, is there going to be like a reverse 911 call from some Autobot that tells all the able-bodied riflemen to show up at town square?
Yeah, yeah. If you get attacked in Wyoming.
Yeah. If Utah tries to annex us.
I think Western Wyoming might go willingly for something like that.
Yeah, well, Jackson is the San Francisco of the Mountain West.
It seems like everywhere, a lot of places have their own San Francisco nowadays, huh?
Well, I've read, just shown you that thing of the list of Wyoming Barbies, right?
No, I didn't see that.
Oh, I will link it. It's hilarious. You haven't seen the Wyoming Barbies?
No, who are the Wyoming Barbies?
It's a list of different types of Barbies.
Oh, okay, got it. There's like a Miss Casper, or there's a Casper Barbie, or how does that work?
Oh, I'll read you a couple of them. The Wyoming State Barbies are finally available. Rock Springs Barbie. This recently paroled Barbie comes with a 9mm handgun, switchblade, 78 El Camino with dark tinted windows, and a meth lab kit. This model is available only for purchase after dark and can be bought with cash only, preferably small bills. Unless you're a cop, then we don't know what you're talking about, man. Boyfriend Ken is in rehab, available at many pawn shops. Let's see. I'll read. Which one do you want me to read? Rollins, Cheyenne, Gillette, Lusk, Laramie, Lander, Cody, Jackson, or Teton Village?
Well, we were talking about Jackson, so let's go with Jackson.
This modern-day homemaker Barbie is available with a Mercedes 4x4 SUV, a Pravda handbag, and matching Nike yoga ensemble. She has a master's degree and double majored, but has the luxury of being a stay-at-home mom with Ken's generous salary. Comes with a Percocet prescription and Botox, Starbucks mug, and traffic-jamming BlackBerry internet cell phone device sold separately. Husband Ken is into fishing, golfing, baseball, and is often working late. Available at Seattle area Starbucks retailers.
You said Pravda handbag.
What is it? Pravda?
Prada.
Oh, Pravda. Yeah, I said the Russian.
The Russian propaganda newspaper. Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. It fits. It's a good Freudian slip. You know, there was not a Casper Barbie, so I wrote one. Casper Barbie. This plump and sassy Barbie dresses her baby in camo, thinks gambling and porn should be illegal because that's immoral. Watches Glenn Beck every day. Her husband Ken is an avid hunter, but with a compound bow because he is a convicted felon from having a small amount of weed 10 years ago and can't legally own a gun. They both hate the government and hate people on welfare, but Ken is a member of a government-subsidized oil workers' union. Casper Barbie and Casper Ken are available at either of the two Walmarts in town or at most church flea markets.
Nice, nice.
Yeah. I worked like an hour on that. It's pretty good. Okay, I'll read one more. The Rollins Barbie. This tobacco-chewing, brassy-haired Barbie comes with a pair of high-heeled sandals with one broken heel from the time she chased beer gut Ken out of Auburn Barbie's trailer. Her ensemble includes low-rise, acid-washed jeans, fake fingernails, strawberry lip gloss, and a see-through halter top. Purchase her Mustang convertible separately and get a free Confederate flag bumper sticker. Boyfriend Ken is in the state prison, available at Army Navy surplus.
Wyoming, yeah. Wyoming Barbies, baby.
Didn't you live in Lander?
Did I live in Lander?
Yeah.
No, I lived in Riverton, but I mean, I went to Lander a lot.
The Lander Barbie. This versatile doll can be easily converted from Barbie to Ken by simply adding or removing snap-on parts. She walks to work, likes to experiment, but will never commit. This model is being phased out and is only available from the manufacturer.
Okay, okay.
So
Barbies.
Yeah.
Apparently that's what we're talking about.
So back to like waving your guns around in a hip-hop video.
I know, right? I love the segue.
I don't have a moral problem with it, but the wiseness of doing it kind of reminds me of that time on The Simpsons that the three bullies steal a golf cart. And they have a video camera, and the line is, videotaping this crime spree is the best idea we've ever had.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you don't want to get arrested for guns and weed, don't wave them around on YouTube.
I guess that's a good point. But, I mean, I don't know. I would always think shooting video of something and putting it up on YouTube, that seems like a safe thing to me. I mean, it scares me that the cops were able to actually do this. And I don't know where the case is now, but they're actually able to arrest these guys because they put a video on YouTube.
And they even had haters from other hip hoppers. One of the comments is, all y'all niggas make Vanilla Ice look like Tupac.
Tupac?
Tupac. Okay. Let me read that again. Leave it in. I'm not going to edit it. I'm old, white, and my exposure to hip-hop consists of owning a cassette tape, remember those, of the first NWA record when it came out, and then meeting you.
Who, me?
And making some music with you.
Yeah, we made some hip-hop.
I like that thing Eazy-E said, not all cops are bad, just like 95% of them.
Yeah. I think hip-hop does get it right a lot when it comes to cops. And that's why I always say, you know, hip-hop does have its libertarian elements, and it does have its lessons that can be taught. Like, there's this song. It's by Plies. Can we play a little bit of this, Michael? This Plies song?
There's some niggas in the courtroom around the country, my nigga. Fight for they motherfucking lives, dawg. And crackers bamming niggas every day, my nigga. My dog went to court the day they gave him 15. Cracker bam, my little nigga, he was 17. Young nigga, don't even know what all that time mean. Twist ass crackers and shout out my nigga Dream. They hollin' mandatory, they want me to do the whole thing. Nigga showed up in court on my dog and did his thing.
That's the concept that this whole song is there's these dudes up there. He calls them, you know, pussy-ass crackers. But if you take the race out of it, which I think you can, and just realize that this is somebody sitting, just because he's wearing the judge's uniform and he's on the bench, he can ruin this 17-year-old kid's whole life, giving him 15 yeah. years. For yeah. what? And, you know, the song goes on to explain these are all victims of the drug war, pretty much. These are all people who are going through this big combine, this big prison complex, just because that's the way that these dudes make money.
I saw this show recently. It's like Juvenile Court or something, reality TV. And there were these three kids who, one of them had a 22, and they were caught with it. They weren't shooting anything with it, but it was like, you know, they got sent to juvie for touching a 22 rifle. And the mother and the judge were both just pointing their superior Catholic finger, if you will, like their superior finger down at this 17-year-old kid, you know, saying, why are you messing with guns? You know better than that. And I'm like, and it's like his dad had given it to him. And the whole like horizontal enforcement and vertical enforcement of guns are bad is included in a lot of that, you know?
Yeah.
It's, yeah, there are hip hoppers that murder people for sport, but not all of them. And just because you have a gun doesn't mean you're an immoral person. It doesn't mean you're on the wrong path. That was the word they used.
Right.
You're not on a right path, son. That's what the judge said.
Right, right. I don't know if I'd agree with the statement that there's a lot of hip-hoppers, unless I don't know how you're defining hip-hoppers there, but I don't think there are a lot of hip-hoppers that are out there shooting people for sport. It might be, you know, stuff people say in songs, but again, like we said, a lot of hip-hop is just fiction, and you got to take it for what it is. This is not people confessing to crimes. This is people telling a story.
And, you know, when someone does get shot, it's often in self-defense.
In life in general?
In the hip-hop community.
Ah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that is in hip-hop a lot, too, is keeping your gun on you. That's another regularly stated theme in lots of hip-hop songs, you know.
He talked about it in an interview we did, but talk about it here, the themes that a lot of hip-hop has in common with libertarianism.
Big one is keeping your gun on you at all time. I mean, there's Boss Hog Outlaws song, you know, I keep my heater on my side when I ride. I ain't finna be a victim of a homicide. And that's what the whole song is about. That's what they dedicate it to. You know, Spice One would dedicate whole songs to his 9. He would have this debate with himself, should he carry the 9 or the 380? And then that became its own spin-off song.
So why would you carry a 380? Because it's so small and concealable?
I think that was the point, was, yeah, it's concealable. Especially if you think, I mean, he's from the West Coast, so I guess it was Bay Area. I mean, you lived in San Francisco.
Well,
did it get warm there?
Rappers live in all these places where you can't have guns. That's part of their problem. They should all just move to Wyoming. I'm sure they'd be welcomed here by the Republican community.
Right, right. I think that leads to another theme, though, is they know, a lot of the rappers know in a lot of the songs, they know that it may be illegal, or they might not have their permit, or they don't give I don't know how much we can cuss in this, but they don't give a crap. It doesn't matter. The point is they have to do it to survive in a lot of the songs. You know, there's somebody that might be on their case or trying to get them. They don't want to get got, and so they carry, which I think is anybody's right.
Another thing, too, I don't like about the justice system is they take away your right, even if in places you can legally carry, they take away the legal aspect of that right if you've been convicted of some crimes. And I could maybe see that if you murdered somebody or menaced somebody and initiated aggression, but it's like you can get it for having weed, or you can get it for
any felony conviction, and you lose your federal Second Amendment.
There's misdemeanors too. Right. And, you know, in Wyoming, a common thing is people losing it for domestic, what's the restraining order type thing called here? PFDB or whatever. Do you know what it is? Something protection order, which, you know, I can see that if the guy's a horrible wife beater, but it's like, if you get in a screaming argument with your wife and she shoves you and you shove her back, you can lose your gun rights for that.
Yeah. Yeah.
In Wyoming. People do all the time. I know a lawyer who, like, a lot of what he does is tries to get people's gun rights back in that situation.
Right. The point to me is you always have a right to self-defense. It's not about the Second Amendment per se. It's about any living creature has the right to defend its own life. And if that means having a gun, nobody can tell you you don't have the right to do what you feel is necessary to protect your own life.
I like the L. Neil Smith take on it. If you're too dangerous to have a gun, you should be in prison.
There you go.
I spilled some soda. I'll be right back. Keep talking.
Keep talking. He spilled some soda. So I guess I'll riff on some more things that I think about hip hop. Not only is it the, you know, keep your gun on you.
Yo,
what's up,
dropping
man?
Mad science. Dropping mad science.
I was trying to drop some mad science. You dropped some mad soda, apparently, though.
I dropped some mad soda.
Yeah.
Fortunately, it went on my notes, not on my keyboard.
Okay. Okay. A lot of what we get from hip-hop and what I get from hip-hop, I mean, we've talked about the drug war. Hip-hop recognizes that there's a drug war in general. I'm not trying to oversimplify things, but I think I see – that's what I get from a lot of hip-hop is a lot of rappers understand that the drug war is wrong. A lot of rappers understand that self-defense in the form of carrying a gun if you need to is right, so they get those things right. And then I think another thing for me at least about hip-hop – is not being told what to do. I think a lot of hip-hop is liberating, and it's that do what you want to do, do what you need to do to get by, to survive, to give yourself a happy life. And it doesn't matter what the feds say. It doesn't matter what the government says. Do you. That's a song. It's a whole song. I'm going to do me. You know, that's the essence. It's do you.
It is very libertarian when you break it down like that, but it doesn't come off that way. And part of it is its own fault, because a lot of hip hop is waving guns at the camera saying, I'm going to get you kind of stuff. You know, a lot of it is posing as an initiator of aggression.
Maybe, but any genre is going to be like that. You got to separate the wheat from the chaff. I mean, again, this is all what I take from hip hop. It's why I decided to rap and why I rap the way I do. So this is my personal experience with it. I mean, I understand a lot of people, it might just sound like a lot of yelling, but I think that's another thing we need to realize as libertarians is that if a lot of people listen to something, if a lot of people are hearing something, it's deeper than just what the surface is. There's a wealth of culture out there, a wealth of different things that people all experience at their own individual level. And I think as libertarians, we should always be getting away from that collectivist idea of stereotyping something and painting something with a broad brush.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that a lot of hatred of it is racism, because it's brown people stating, I'm powerful, I'm my own man, leave me alone. You know, it's like that guy, the guy said, like, he thought our music was gangster rap, and there's nothing gangster about it. And if he thinks that, he thinks all brown people are murderers. And I think that a lot of the drug war is racially motivated, too.
It definitely affects different races in different ways. I mean, it disproportionately targets, you know, blacks and Hispanics.
And also, you know, there was at one time a much higher prison sentence for having crack cocaine, which black people tended to smoke, than having powder cocaine, which white people tended to snort at the time. And instead of lowering the penalties for both, the politician's answer was to raise the penalties till they're both high.
Yeah.
It's like, we're not racist. We'll screw everybody.
We'll screw everybody equally. Yeah, they're not racist.
Black men still go to... Blacks and Mexicans go to jail more for nonviolent offenses than white people do.
Yeah, I would definitely believe that's
true. I mean, part of that's socioeconomic, in that white people tend to be able to afford a lawyer and not have to depend on a public defender, which is often a guy just out of law school, first time in a courtroom, or just they don't fight very hard for it too. It's kind of like they don't want to, public defenders don't want to fight very hard because they're kind of beholden to the judge in a way. And a really good analogy for this is, I remember when I was signed to a major label, my manager said, don't ever have the same lawyer as your record company, and don't ever have a lawyer that frequently represents record companies, because there are 6 major record companies at the time, and there were a million bands, right. You know, so they're not going to fight really, really, really hard against those major labels because they're golf buddies with them. They have to work with them again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's the same with public defenders. I mean, an analogy I heard was like, think about your chances in a court. It's like you're in a building owned by the people that are prosecuting you, with a judge that's paid by the people that are prosecuting you, with a lawyer that's paid by the people that are prosecuting you under their rules. You know, it's kind of like someone said, if you sued Microsoft in civil court and had to go into a court owned by Microsoft.
Right, right. And your lawyer was also owned by Microsoft.
Yeah, and the building and everything about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The whole system is them. I mean, that is the system. And that's why it's impossible to fight it on its own terms, really, because it rigs every game that it's a party of to its own advantage.
The whole system is a scam. That's one of your lines. Catchy toe-tapping hip-hop numbers. Our catchy toe-tapping hip-hop numbers.
Yeah. I would definitely classify what we did as rap more than hip-hop.
Explain. Because I still maintain that my belief is that rap is the music, hip-hop is the music and the culture.
No. Rap is the vocal style. And
that's what I get for learning about rap from Wikipedia. Okay, go on.
Yeah.
I'm at the feet of the master.
I mean, because think about what a rapper is. A rapper is the person that's doing the rapping. So the rap is the vocal style. You know, if I spit a verse, I spit a rap. And I would definitely classify what we did as rap because to me that's the important part, is that was a way of us communicating an idea to people, was through the rap. The music was important, but the music to me, it was also a fusion. You know, it was supposed to be punk and rap and hip hop. So definitely
with
what the
punkin'
driving
and the rapping
rap.
And the hippin' and the hoppin'.
Yeah, and the eating of the pudding.
And the eating of the pudding.
The eating of the pudding.
Did he really say that?
Who, Bill Cosby? He was a pudding salesman. He's slinging pudding.
I know, but did he really say, with the hippin' and the hoppin' and the eating of the pudding?
Was that
Simpsons?
That's not Keenan or Kelly. Yeah, that's Keenan from the Good Burger Kid. He's on SNL now. I think he did an impression of Cosby where he said that.
One of the best hip-hop references on TV I've heard is when Bobby Hill joins that punk Christian skater Bible study group. And he starts dressing in like a hoodie and a beanie and a black t-shirt that says, it says, hell sucks. And Hank's really offended by that. And he comes in, he says, Bobby, you look like a burglar. and then Bobby's listening to some Christian hip hop. And Hank comes in and says, rap music is just criminals yelling about their girlfriend's lady parts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So getting back to guns and weed for a minute, can you talk about the guy you interviewed that's the medical marijuana user that's fighting to keep his gun rights?
Which one? The one in Washington?
Yeah, and then there's a lady in Oregon, too.
I don't know about the lady in Oregon. What's happening there?
There's a lady in Oregon that she's a medical marijuana user who's fighting to get her concealed carry permit, and the sheriff's denying her, saying she's a habitual marijuana user because she's a medical marijuana user,
oh,
and is denying
wow.
her.
Wow.
She's just going to open carry if she can't get a permit.
That goes back to the point of the power to license is the power to control. I mean, when you think about driving, I know people, it can be hard, especially if you live in a state like Texas where people are, where the cops are so adamant about busting you for speeding. It can be hard to get a driver's license or maintain your driver's license. And if you make it to where people have to have a license to carry a gun, you suffer from the same problem. I guess if I were her, yeah, I would just open carry. She should be a little bit more defiant. But I think what that does most of all is it highlights that fact that if a group of people can say this person can have such and such and this person can't, it's going to lead to problems and abuses and the taking away of freedoms in general. So anytime somebody says, do you have a license for that? Just roll your eyes and think about how ridiculous the concept of government licenses are in the first place.
Well, it goes back to that thing of when you register something, you become a partner, a business partner.
The state becomes a party in the contract. That's what we were
saying. Yeah. And it's a partner that doesn't contribute and only controls.
Doesn't contribute, didn't put up the money. It's completely ridiculous that it has the final say. That's the other thing, too, because, like you said, the judges and the cops and the whole system is paid for by the government. So it is the all-powerful party almost in that contract.
So speaking of speeding, I got a radar detector recently.
Nice.
And I really like it.
Yeah.
And it's legal. And the whole thing started me thinking, like, instead of just radar detectors, why aren't there just cop detectors?
That's a genius idea. I don't know. How would you do it?
I don't know. But, you know, radar detectors allow you, in a way, to step out of the system. And most people that use them don't increase the danger of the road. I mean, the speed limits are really low, and it's one of those one-size-fits-all things. I mean, it's like 65 out in the county and 35 in the city, but 65 in the county in Wyoming, right. I mean, in Wyoming, you can't see a car for 20 minutes sometimes when you're driving.
Yeah, you drive between road. Casper and Riverton, and you might pass two cars.
And I think that a good driver could safely drive from Casper to Riverton going
100.
85 or 100 yeah. most of the time. I've been on the Autobahn in Germany. It kicks ass. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, our speed limits are ridiculously low. I think part of that, the reason why we could consider them ridiculously low, is cars are so much better technologically than they were in the past as far as safety yeah. and the way they can handle the road. It's utterly ridiculous to me that the state thinks it has the interest of the driver at heart more than the actual driver. I mean, who has the most incentive there not to die? It's the person yeah. driving the car. Yeah. It's not somebody writing a law. It's not somebody putting up a sign.
And why do cars cost so much?
Probably because of all sorts of taxes and government regulations. And
do you know about the concept of post-scarcity?
Post-scarcity?
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like somebody having the idea that we don't have to approach economics as if everything's scarce anymore.
Yeah, I'm going to read the definition of it. It's a hypothetical form of economy or society often explored in science fiction in which things such as goods, services, and information are free or practically free due to the abundance of fundamental resources, matter, energy, and intelligence in conjunction with sophisticated automated systems capable of converting raw material into finished goods, allowing manufacturing to be as easy as duplicating software.
Hmm. Okay.
And, you know, I really think that if there weren't all the regulations that cripple business and competition, I think that we would be closer to post-scarcity.
I would agree. If we solve all those problems, there's always going to be more work to be done. I think that would mean there's also this thing, this idea that eventually technology is going to move so fast that things are going to start happening faster than human thought can even process it.
Well, there's a book written in 1970 that I read as a kid called Future Shock that's about exactly
yeah,
that
exactly.
thing. And it predicts, I mean, in 1970, computers were the size of houses and cost millions of dollars, and only the government and universities had them. And then when the private market took them over, they became, you know, something you slip in your pocket that costs $200. But that book predicted a lot of things. It predicted that manufacturing would have a lot more options. You know, like when the first car came out, Ford said, you can have any color you want as long as it's black. And in the 70s, there were a lot more options than that. You know, like if you wanted shoes or you wanted a car, there were, you know, 20 or 30 options. And now you can go online and order things cheaply made to your specifications. And he predicted that. He predicted things like Netflix and Amazon and even Friendster, Facebook. And he also predicted that they would do what they do now, which is offer you suggestions based on your previous viewing and buying profiles.
Right, right.
He said that it would be an automated electronic butler, and he called it Oliver, and it stood for something. It was Oliver, the computer butler.
Nice.
It would go, well, you've bought this magazine, this car, and you're interested in this before, so maybe you'll like this. And that's what all database-driven, you know, web interfaces do now.
Yeah, yeah.
A problem with that book was I think that a lot of the 70s view of science fiction becoming science fact, of, you know, futurism, had a real kind of socialist utopian bent of, like, the machines will be benevolent and make all man's free. And there's something to that. I mean, post-scarcity would make people more equal and more rich. But it also, like, I think a lot of the scientists and visionaries from the 70s had this real human secularist Sharian idea of, like, there will be no guns and no bombs and no armies and no one will need to carry a gun. And the government will tell you what kind of food to eat because it's good for you.
Yeah, I don't think we can at all look to the state to cause those kinds of things. But I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with talking about the way the market slowly if it has to get around the government. But if you let it be free, it's what's brought us all this amazing innovation over the past years. I mean, if you look, you know, 20 years ago, things were completely different. 20, 30 years ago, if you look about before the internet existed, the world was completely different. it makes it almost impossible to imagine exactly what the world's going to look like in 5-10 years.
Well, science fiction, I mean, again, we're going back to like the haters saying, oh, libertarians live in a world of science fiction. But science fiction becomes science fact. I mean, the Star Trek communicator became the cell phone, and they look like them. And some nerd who likes Star Trek designed them. And if you look at Star Trek, too, I mean, it's kind of like a UN situation.
The Federation.
A Federation. Yeah, it's a very statist idea. Whereas I always liked the sci-fi that was either more libertarian like Heinlein or even like showing the evil underbelly of it like Terminator 2, where like you put everything in control of the machines and then the machines decide that the humans are a parasite and need to be taken out of the equation. You know, they lock you out of your smart houses and then use your Star Wars defense system to start shooting lasers at your house. You know?
I think Terminator 2 was an awesome movie.
It's one of my favorite movies. It really is.
Me too. I think it was the first movie I cried at. I think a lot of people my age cried at it when he gets lowered into the Molten Steel.
First movie I cried at was Jaws, but I'm a little older than you. Actually, the first movie I cried at was One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and my mother took me to see it when I was 10. She didn't know what it was about, and like people in the theater when we were leaving saw me crying and were looking at my mother like, how dare you bring a child to this movie?
Nice.
So what did you think about that YouTube video that the guy made himself in Delaware of the authorities coming and stealing his basketball hoop?
Did he make that himself?
Yeah, he set up the camera when they were coming. A little backstory on it, and then I'll play a clip from it, audio clip. The Department of Transportation in Delaware decided that people having basketball hoops firmly mounted, like concrete mounted in their front yards, was dangerous because it would make it harder for emergency vehicles to pull up on your yard. So some bureaucrat decided this, and then they sent out men and women with guns to enforce it.
And a bulldozer.
And a bulldozer. And first of all, if anybody thinks that an 80-ton fire truck couldn't just run over one of those and knock it down, they're crazy. And second of all, so what? You know, if my house is burning down and they can't put it out because of my basketball hoop, who are they to protect me from that?
But we have responded back to those letters, myself, right, and my state representative, and we have not gotten responses to our responses to them.
Okay. Unfortunately,
so we felt this matter was still pending. And for them to come out here and ambush us at 8:15 in the morning and start stealing basketball poles is not right.
Here's what I'm going to tell you right now, though, okay?
Can I have 2 hours to get my TRO filed?
No, you may not.
Why?
The car needs to be moved right now.
I'll move the car.
Listen, I do not want to arrest you or your wife, but that is where this has gone. The car needs to be moved.
She'll be up that pole again in 2 seconds.
She will not be up that pole.
The law is supposed to take it, but they offered you the courtesy of letting you keep it.
You can stand. You may stand here. You may not.
Please video. That pole's staying, please. You just told me I can keep it. You lied. You said we had the option of keeping the pole.
You can come and pick it up.
No, you didn't say that. You said I can keep my pole.
Your chance right now. Go in the house. Oh, here comes the train. This is our house. We can stand out here. You cannot talk to these people. I can talk
you
to you.
You just lied to me, officer.
You can talk to me. That's
roll
fine.
The tape back.
You know what? You
just told me we could keep that thing. And now you lie. That's
you
a great use of force and money power today.
And
I have the freedom to speak. It's the United States First Amendment rights to speak my will.
Yeah, exactly. If you want to take that risk, that's your risk. You deserve to be able to make that decision.
To prove that a large vehicle could just run over one of those like a twig, I'm gonna link the Killdozer video. Have you seen the Killdozer video?
No. Sounds awesome, though.
It was a guy in Colorado some years ago who was just totally screwed over out of his property by bureaucrats, and he spent a year putting armor on his bulldozer in his garage, and then he went on a rampage and destroyed the town and then shot himself.
Jeez.
You know, the whole time, I mean, police and SWAT were, like, firing weapons at this thing, and it was just bouncing off. I mean, he took a bulldozer and put concrete and steel around all the sides of it. He fitted it with 3 video cameras so he could drive inside and see what he was destroying. and even had like air compressors set up to blow dust off of the video cameras, and had food, water, ammo, you know, a toilet inside, and was prepared to die because he sealed himself into it. And he only went after properties either owned by the city or owned by people on the board that had screwed him over.
Wow. I mean, I didn't even know about that story. Somebody should make a movie about that.
Well, there was a movie called Killdozer in the 70s about a possessed bulldozer, but I think that's where he got the idea. But a lot of people consider him a true American hero. I mean, I think he's a lunatic, but as they said in Taxi Driver, here is a man who would not take it anymore.
How did they finally defeat the Killdozer?
He killed himself. Okay. He ruptured the radiator and it stopped moving, and then he shot himself.
Wow.
And it took him like the cops like an hour to get inside it to find his dead body.
Wow.
Yeah.
Insane.
Killdozer. I will link the Killdozer.
Well, see, now I'd rather watch the Killdozer than the basketball goals.
I know. Well, it brings up another thing, too. It's like, do you think that would fly in Wyoming? What do you think the average Wyomingite would do if the city or the county pulled up, you know, or the state came to their house with a bulldozer and tried to steal their private property? I think they would get shot, some of them.
I don't know. I guess. It's so hard to predict how people would react to that because that's the problem too, is a lot of people hold anybody as long as they sent out somebody with the badge to do it, I think a lot of people would say, okay.
You know, that video is a perfect example of the bureaucrat backed by government guns. I mean, the blonde lady is a cop, but she doesn't look armed and she's in her jogging suit. And
yeah.
She's the one calling all the orders. And then behind her, there's a sheriff or a state cop or a county cop or something. There's a man with a gun. And then there's two or three guys with a bulldozer to do the heavy lifting.
Yep.
And it's a perfect example of government gone awry.
It's a microcosm of the state. It really is.
It is. You know, a lot of the comments online, and this happened a while ago, and people have kind of even stopped talking about it, which is another reason to bring it up. But a lot of the comments I've seen online are from people going like, why are you even complaining about this? You know, there's a lot bigger things going on in our country. But I really think of it like
that's where the rubber meets the road. That's where that affects you. I mean, of course, if somebody steals your property, that's going to be important to you.
Yeah. And it's like things that happen on a government scale, statewide or nationally or internationally, are kind of hard to wrap your head around. But like someone coming with a bulldozer to your house and stealing your property. Yeah.
We can all imagine it.
Yeah.
It's something we can think about in real concrete terms.
And I say, first they came for the basketball hoops, but I did not speak up because I did not play basketball.
There you go. I got to chunk the deuce, Michael, though. I got to go pick my wife up.
What does chuck the deuce mean? Take a
No, I gotta go leave. I gotta chuck the deuce. That means show you my two fingers.
All right, so give me your quick wrap up on how things are getting better. You better start making notes on these things because I'm gonna ask you every time.
I know. I don't know how you expect me to come up with a new way to be optimistic every cast. But okay.
Any day above ground is a good day.
There you go. As long as you're alive, then things can have the chance of getting better. So.
Things are pretty good, man. I'm sitting in a home we own with some cats waiting for my wonderful wife to get home and talking across the internet, and they're not hacking me yet or putting a gun to my head for saying what I believe.
Yep. And I'm about to go pick my wife up, and we're going to go to Walmart and enjoy the wonders of the price system and the goods we're going to get that are happening in spite of the government.
The
relatively free market. And I'm going to sit there and imagine how much better the world would be if everything ran like a Walmart.
I know. I think in libertarian paradise, Walmart would replace the government in a lot of ways, in a good way.
In providing the services.
Yeah. If you needed to pay to use the private road, you'd get a little magnetic card you'd buy at Walmart.
It'd be like an iTunes card.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, brother. All right, man. I'm going to let you go. Peace.
Peace, homie.
Hello, freedom fiends. It's your boy, Dean, from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me, and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I got to make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Sharealike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation.
Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.